our denomination.
You speak loudly enough that I think that'll be fine.
I can move it on here if you want. That'll cushion it a little bit. Of helping the church really find its new life in the United Church of Christ, but not having the leisure to work out all the organizational things properly or appropriately, but had to do that with one hand while the other was deeply involved in ministering to a body of people trying to be faithful in some way in the light of all the social issues that were breaking out all over in the Northern California. One of the most profound ones that hit us a little bit later on, 1970-ish, 71, was when our denomination ordained the first homosexual,
yes.
Bill Johnson, in this church.
In this church.
Here is where it
took place.
And there's
a little film about that I've seen. It was very interesting.
That took place in this building. He was a member of this church while he was a student at PSR and was helping here as a staff member when he decided that he had to let that fact of his lifestyle be known. Now, there have been many others, of course, over the years that never let it be known, but he then had to face that issue. That took us through the tortures, I can't tell you what.
I can understand.
From here. Yeah. So that was another one of the series of things all along the line with the farm workers and fortunately, because of people like Chris Hartmeyer, who we leaned on heavily for our knowledge of what was happening. We did not pretend at all to be experts in that field. Leaned heavily on Chris and his own integrity. At times, I was quite frustrated, frankly, because the strategy of the farm workers would shift. And we'd have to shift so quickly in order to do what they felt needed to be done. But just when we thought we were on the same wavelength and we were trying to get our churches to understand that when we were zigging, it looked like the farm workers were zagging.
Give me an example of that, if you remember.
It happens so often, simply because I have Walter, or I call Chris myself. Most of the time, I have Walter assigned to work with them in the conference office. I'd say, Walter, call up Chris and find out why the shift in emphasis right now. It was either something that Caesar had felt needed to be done in his leadership, or as the farm workers would reflect in working with it. And I can understand their dilemma. I was not critical. I was at times terribly frustrated because just when I thought we were aboard and doing what was going to be helpful, I was put in a position of having told the people in our churches one thing when another tactic was suddenly used. Mm-hmm. I wish I could remember specific incidents. They happened so often, I don't know that I can. But it was a fact that I lived with all the time. We trusted Chris, and we trusted the farm workers and what they were doing and what they had to do. We couldn't always understand why the tactic was changed or what was now being asked of the churches had to be done. It was difficult enough to get support. Then to have it not clear as to why we ought to reverse and go in another direction, I don't know. Let me, if I may, and if it's all right with you, just tell you, first of all, how we got involved.
I'd like to know that.
And I wish I could say it was out of great, noble, courageous, ethical visions that came to us. Most of the time, things don't happen that way.
I would suspect it if you did.
It was because we felt a concern for the people who live down in those countless number of shack communities down in the Central Valley, made up primarily of farm workers, I mean those working on farms, the stoop laborers and so forth. And you know, there were, I don't know, an endless number of those. I would drive up and down the Central Valley on my duties, going to the various churches, doing what needed to be done in terms of our church life, and you know, go by these communities and see them. And I knew of the ministry of the farm workers too,
the migrant ministry,
which had been well established and was held in high regard by most of our churches. They felt the plight of the farm workers and had for many years gone in the direction of supplying aid of all kinds. That was one of the problems later on when the migrant ministry changed its basic thrust. Many of our churches, not understanding, felt that something either had gone radically wrong or they had been terribly fooled or whatever. But anyway, it was because of that concern. And we knew these communities. And sometimes churches of an area would pick out a particular community and see that its relief things got to this community or that. They used to do all kinds of things in helping the migrant ministry's program. And it was such a good program. Then the conference became concerned that we do something together, and not just our own regional conference, but our Board for Homeland Ministries, which was the arm of our church, which does mission within the United States, felt a concern for the little community of Goshen. Partly because of the fact that Jim Drake, who had grown up in our church in Tulare, was graduating from seminary, and I don't know whether he and Susan were married at that time or not. It must have been about then. But anyway, he was out of seminary, and we thought it would be because of his knowledge of that area, as well as his own personal convictions of and feelings that something ought to be done, that we started the work to the community in Goshen. And old Jim did a variety of things. It was in kind of community development. Mostly he lived among the people, lived right there. He and Susan lived in the community and did a variety of community help things. Mm-hmm. I don't recall offhand what they were. I remember one very specifically. We did get a piece of land a little ways out of the edge of town and got funds and built a community center. And I remember the day we went down there. I went down there several times while it was being constructed. And I still have some pictures of those days. Another community in Goshen and so forth. Anyway, we built the community center, and then the folks finally had a place at least to meet over their common interests and concerns. Then one day, we learned from Jim Drake that while he was interested in continuing on at Goshen, that there was another group over in the Porterville area. They were farm workers, but I think they were specializing, I'm almost sure, in flowers, in rose growing, if that's it. And if nodding your head means that you're corroborating something that's a fact,
it is.
Then that I forget what the name of the group was. It was a
Mount Arbor Nurseries.
Yeah, that's right. It had to do with the flowers rather than the other kinds of crops.
Yeah, it was mostly roses, I think.
Yeah, and they wanted. Jim says he'd like to wanted to go over in the Porterville area, and I guess he had been invited to be with that group and thought he could be doing more with a particular group rather than the collection, an amorphous collection of people in Goshen. He thought he'd probably done what he could do there, and wanted to go over to Porterville. So we talked about it in the respective commissions and so forth of our denomination, and decided it would be all right for him to do that. So he went over to Porterville and worked with them. And I remember those many conversations we had about that. Then one day I sat in my office in San Francisco and got a call from Jim Drake, and he said that the group had decided to go out on a, well, I guess you'd not call it, it would be a strike, but more than a strike, it was more of a witness to a fact of something that was unjust. What I mean is, the strike, it was to be for a determined period, as I recall. I think they were going to go out for a week or 2 weeks, and simply to demonstrate, to call attention to their plight. I don't, as I recall, and I don't know if my memory is faulty at this point, it was not to be an undetermined period. It was to be a demonstration, letting people know, because I guess they felt they just couldn't give up their jobs and be out on that basis. Well, anyway, they were going to be out for a week that I knew of, maybe longer, but at least a week. And Jim called to ask my permission. He said, do you think it would be all right for me to go out on this demonstration and on this strike with them? Well, this was different than what we had done before. Serving the people in Goshen was purely a welfare matter and a community development matter, but there weren't demonstrations and things of this sort. So I remember Jim's asking whether or not he should go out with them. And I said, well, Jim, that raises a whole new issue, one that will require us to think a little bit about. Then we have you involved in an activity that's not so much community development or helping and things of this sort. You are becoming a leader among them in another way. And I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will personally give you permission to do that. I believe in it that much and want you to do it if you feel you want to do it. With this understanding, I know you have some vacation time coming, and at the next meeting of the board of directors of our conference, I will raise the issue as to whether or not your being out with them is a matter of your being on vacation or not. The issue involved, obviously, was that if it was on vacation time, then Jim was not doing this on his own. He was doing this with our permission, and the time that he was taking off to do that was not his vacation time. He would get other vacation time later on. If the board decided that was vacation time, that would raise some other issues. The board met, and they understood the full consequences of what took place, and they decided that that was not Jim's vacation time. That was his work time, and by that little action, we found ourselves in the workers' movement in a different way than helping out a local project all of the style of the migrant ministry before. It was not long thereafter when Caesar invited that union, as I recall, over Porterville, that group, to join in the larger effort of the farm workers. And they decided to join, and Jim Drake, in a sense, went along with it, with that package, and was suddenly then a part of the wider ministry in the farm worker movement. That's how the United Church of Christ became involved in the farm worker movement. One thing had moved on to another, and sometimes big doors swing on little hinges. And it was on that little hinge of deciding whether Jim Drake was out on vacation or not that was the first step that got us involved. Once we were involved, we stayed involved, and all the things that followed thereafter. But not many people remember that little story. I don't know that it's written down anywhere.
I've never heard it before.
It was out of that.
I knew about the Rose Worker Strike, and I knew that Jim had been involved in it.
But I'd
never heard that whole story before. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
And it does show how we often get involved, just little by little, just sort of these small decisions that become big decisions.
Yeah, I mean, that was a little thing, whether it was vacation or not. I mean, that was the big matter, except that it did, it tilted you in a direction. It's, you know, it's like water that comes down a hill and meets an obstruction and can go either one way or the other, and you know, it, off you went in that direction. I also, along that same time, and I don't have the date, though I might imagine it could be found, the predecessor organization of the present Northern California Ecumenical Council was the Northern California Council of Churches. I was president of that council for 2 years in the mid-60s. Don't remember the exact year, 64, 65, in there. And I remember very well when the matter came before the council for its endorsement of the action of the National Farm Worker Ministry, and of our endorsing that. That was much more of an endorsing action, and I remember that day very well. I can even remember the people I was sitting near on that occasion, because it was such a momentous thing. That was terribly important to have the Council of Churches behind that movement. However, it wasn't the kind of a movement that had a constituency. Councils don't, you know, the constituency of the council are the member denominations. And sometimes the action of the church council in overtly endorsing the actions of the farm worker ministry put the member denominations on a spot. Some of the denominations were more open to helping than others. I think probably ours was as active or more active almost than any others. But other denominations in varying degrees, some of them kind of got dragged along into it because they were members of the Council of Churches. The council went strongly behind it because of the leadership of the council, but it created another area and level of tension and strategy that had to be dealt with. Sometimes I would have to defend, when I went to our churches, I would have to defend or explain to our churches not just what our denomination was doing, but how come we belong to an organization that was endorsing this thing so strongly. So it began to be a pretty interesting, did a lot of personal strategizing as to how you were endorsing, how you were speaking for, how you were meeting with constituencies, most of whom, I would say, neither fully understood nor endorsed what we were doing. That's a little hard to say because you know, you can't give facts and figures and numbers. I think there was a sympathy throughout our churches for the farm workers. There was a lack of understanding as to how the church would get involved with things where there were demonstrations and people being hurt and this kind of thing, which is for many people difficult when they think about their church life.
Yes. Yeah. That conflict that we North Americans were not trained for, by and large.
No, that's right. And people tend to think of their churches as places of not repose necessarily, activity, but not of the kind that causes confrontation and concomitant political action and so forth and so on.
Did I tell you that what Chris had told me when he was advising me who I should meet with, and told me I should meet with you and Walter. That every denomination had its fight, but that all other fights paled in light of the UCC's Northern California fight. That's what he told me.
It was I don't know so much. Yeah, I guess the word fight could be used. It was struggle.
Struggle.
And struggle at several levels. And it's not hard to understand why. Two things added to immeasurably to the conflict. One is that all of our churches in the Central Valley that are all related to the agricultural scene, many strong churches, churches that have been leadership churches in our denomination for a long, long time, who had, I think of the Porterville Church, who had made a name for itself in its concern for missions overseas, had an enviable record in that regard, and a lot of the other churches doing various and sundry things. But you see, all of those churches were made up of people who were ranchers, farmers, and I don't think we had a single member of the farm labor community in any of our churches. Now, we had people who were sympathizers, but who themselves were not that. And either, you know, the whole economy of the Central Valley is such that it's all, a great deal of it, most of it is related to the agricultural scene. And if these people in the churches were not ranchers themselves, farmers themselves, the whole economy that supported their farming enterprise was, and they were the people who made up the churches. So you had the whole span of the Central Valley and half of the churches of our denomination made up of people who were being hit by the farm worker movement.
So about half the churches in this conference were really directly affected.
I'd say a strong third to a half. Well, I'd say pretty close to a half, I guess, yeah. And it's not only a matter of numbers, but it's a matter of geography. You know, the state being like it is, geography-wise, well, we don't have some communities where we have no churches at all. There was a networking of those churches, and so I would say that we were just split in that way. We were split for another reason. And this came up often. In a state like this, and I suppose it's not unusual, it's like any other place. Our office, for instance, the conference office was in San Francisco. The Council of Churches office was in San Francisco. It's a pivotal economic, socio center in Northern California. That's just the way it is. But there are a lot of other areas, Sacramento and Fresno and Redding and so forth and so on, who are centers in their own right, and they have a kind of a built-in resentment to the fact that a lot of things are being decided by those city slickers up in the city. And I wish I could tell you how many times I had it thrown at me. I remember one time Chris and I were in a confrontation. He and I were alone against about 300 of ranchers down in a church building down in Fresno. Boy, that was a mob. And I remember one man standing up in that meeting and saying, well, quite apart from the farm labor issue, which is bad enough, but he said, we don't believe anything that you folks from the San Francisco and Los Angeles areas come telling us what we're supposed to be doing. And no matter what you say, we're not going to believe you and we're going to be against it. Well, I mean, before you talk about the issue, and all of the things, you've got already resentment of people, and that's not unlike a lot of other areas where rural peoples sometimes have a feeling of antipathy toward the centers where other decisions are being made.
That affect their lives.
It's like the Outlanders feel about Washington and all of this. And so this issue was not, you know, pure and simple. That there was vast injustice in the fields. By lifting that up, you lifted up the whole mindset of people living in an area like this. And when they got hurt directly, then of course they wondered why their church was letting them down.
I'd like to follow up on that a little bit, because several people have mentioned this. And do you have any impressions or actual recollections of whether the primary problem was one of feeling threatened and therefore angry, or whether the primary problem really was an economic sort of taking away their livelihood, or a really severe economic impact on the small farmers?
Well, I think it's both. Obviously, unionization would increase the cost of farmers in employing people. I mean, that's the reason for having a union, to make sure that the standards are raised. There's no denying that it was purely and simply, in some regards, therefore, an economic issue. They were not going to earn as much themselves. They had to share, unless the cost of things were raised on the general market place. The other, however, has to do with a certain ethos of the agricultural community. Terribly independent people who developed a style of life, worked for them over the years, a way by which they could get cheap labor coming up from Mexico. Many of the growers, I think, treated the people pretty fairly by what they thought were their standards then. Some of them felt, I remember one grower particularly, I'll not identify by name, but I remember him, he was really a close friend. Got to know him very well. He was very active in the life of our church. And he said, you know, Dick, if some commission in our denomination here could spell out for me what more I should be doing to help the people that I've got working for me, I would be very open to their suggestions. I resent them being organized to tell me what I have to do. But I felt for this man, because I genuinely felt that he wanted to do right things. He wasn't ready to say that the thing to do is to recognize a union of people working on it. That was just an impossible kind of a thing. And I think there were just a lot of people in our churches, to be sure. Some were doing not right things, but some of them, I think, sincerely felt they were. Now, they probably weren't. They probably should have done more. I have to say that. But they were not trying to be overlords in the sense of grinding people into the earth. But nevertheless, they got hit. Like the others do. I think what they wanted to know about, they wanted our denomination, even if we had decided to help the farm workers, that we would also be willing to at least listen to the problems of the growers. And some of the things that we countered with, saying, how come you folks don't get together and get organized? Why don't you growers get organized? not to fight the workers necessarily, but you know, you came and get your own act together. And of course, their style of life was that they You just don't organize farmers very easily. You don't, you're having a hard time doing it now, although they're being threatened now, and they're pulling together. So they could have dealt, I think, more constructively with some of these problems if they had taken some steps of their own.
Like their marketing problems, yeah, such as that.
Right. We did create another little group at the time, which may have helped a little bit. And it was called... trying to think of the letters of the Economic Justice, EJAC, that's what it was. Economic Justice in the Agricultural Community, EJAC. What this was that...
I want to warn you that soon this is going to pop. It startles me and whoever I'm interviewing every time. Organized the economic justice
in the agricultural community. What this was a the councils of churches in California are divided into two, Northern California and Southern California. Mm-hmm. And we put together at that time it had no authority over the two local state councils, but it did. You know, a lot of our things were statewide in their effect. And that group did put together this small commission of some people who had a special interest in doing that. And our attempt was to try to not take the side of the growers. That was not it. But when it was said that we were leaning over one-sidedly and listening only to the plight of the workers, there were those who believed that profoundly, who said that is the issue, there really is no other issue. That the growers said, but we don't find a place where we can be heard. And so that body was created. It did hold some hearings, it did a few things, it didn't amount to really a great deal, it didn't change anything very much. I supported it somewhat, only in the sense that you're dealing with a disparate group of people in our churches, and if it was true that the growers felt that they were not getting a hearing, there was no forum that listened to their point of view, then I was willing to see that there was a vehicle by which at least they could state it. Though I personally did not agree a great deal with what was being said, but at least it was an attempt to say, yeah, we're trying to be fair. It's so lopsided with unfairness in the other direction, however, that I remember talking with Chris and others on a number of occasions who said, who didn't like the idea of that other little group at all. And I understand why. Because they had a cause, and it was important that cause be strategized with every thrust that they could. And there was no question that our denomination had backed the workers' movement so strongly that any little efforts in the other way really were strongly unbalanced. Now, I don't know what direction you might want to go. I'd be glad to try to answer questions, even in some impressionable things along the line.
I was interested, if you remember, in when the conference made any early decision to either support the grape strike or to support one of the boycotts.
Oh yeah, but that's right, that was all involved too. You pressed me at a point where I should have an answer and I don't easily have one. I do know this, that there were two levels of decision making in a way. We had a commission in our fellowship in Northern California. We changed some of the names now, but it was basically the Commission on Mission and Outreach and Concern, Social Concern. And that commission was free to make its recommendations and to say, yes, we want to endorse this, not endorse that, support this, support that, or whatever. At times, they would bring recommendations to the board of directors. Many times, they would not, choosing simply to let it be one of the commissions of a conference say its thing to people without it becoming an official thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to take time to go back and look at old records if I could ever find them as to when the board of directors specifically endorsed the Great Strike. I know the sentiment was that we would, and the Commission on Outreach and Mission, whatever it was called, did, and so forth and so on, sent word out to our churches, urging the churches to do this and so forth. Did Walter Press recall that?
No, he said he really had a hard time with some of those details. What he was recalling was, his recollection was that the struggle often focused at the annual meetings around the budget items. I mean, this shows you've got smart people. Because that's where it's at usually, the budget. But that it revolved around, it often revolved around the item of support of Jim Drake's salary and the
item of
support, financial support for the California Migrant Ministry and later the National Farm Worker Ministry.
That's right. I think we did more of that kind of supportive thing and inferred our support of the other things, knowing, it was a battle every year. We met at a Selmar, and I could tell you more than you want to know in terms of your history about some of those meetings. When you go to the meetings these days, I kind of laugh about it because it's so quiet and orderly. But from the time we would arrive, there would be issues stacked high around that, mostly having to do with the budget. Whether we should continue to support Jim Drake, whether we should continue to give any aid to the migrant ministry. And there were at times, as one could go back and look at those records, of resolutions passed on certain things. More often than not, however, it would be the commission or an ad hoc group deciding that they wanted to support this or that. And that was their right to do so, of course, if they wanted to, rather than an official all-out action. Now, I'm not saying that we didn't endorse it. I must confess, the years go by. Gee, but it's getting a little harder to remember some of those things. I was about to say something along that line, however, and got away from it. Let me jump to something else rather completely because it was pretty dramatic at the time. This thing, of course, occupied the whole country as the farm workers were deployed and people were sent to speak in various communities. Our national synod, our general synod of our denomination, met in St. Louis. It must have been about 1969, as I recall.
So what do you call it when your national people?
It's the United Church of Christ General Synod.
General Synod.
I remember this in a little note I had for Sid Smith. I remember so well the debate on the floor of our United Church General Synod meeting in St. Louis, in which I took quite a part, and that was in 1969, I think it was 69, when the assembly voted to send a whole plane load of people to the Imperial Valley from our General Synod in support of the Coachella strike. And Northern California was really on the spot. They wanted our warm endorsement that this was a good idea. I wasn't really sure that it was a good idea, but people across the country had caught sight of the vision of what could be done. And, you know, to charter a plane and all was really something. I don't know how many went. I think at least a couple hundred people. We passed the hat among our delegation who were there and came up with enough funds to pay the way for one of our delegates, who's a minister of one of our churches down in Fresno now, Jack Takianagi, to come back with that plane load when it flew to Southern California, to be there as whatever help he could be, but as a kind of a personal eyes and ears for us to report to us what was happening. In the meantime, this is the typical of the kind of thing I had to try to do. I got on the phone that night and called about 30 of our ministers in our Central Valley churches, saying that this General Synod of our denomination, with a lot of other business to take care of, had voted to suspend its business so that a plane load of people, a large plane load, would come out in support of the grape strike, or would it be the grape strike?
It was during the Teamster conflict, I think.
Yeah, that was Coachella Valley. Yeah, it was Coachella Valley for sure. Yeah. And I said, I want you people to know about this before it hits the papers tomorrow. That was on a Saturday. And to say some word in your churches if you want to, so that you get word first, so that you're not being caught off guard again. They're off there, they decided to do something to us here. Well, it was that kind of an action that we were always trying to do. The interesting thing was that I suggested on the floor of that General Synod meeting, because they wanted to know what we thought about this whole thing. And I said, well, if you're going to see and to hear, as well as to be a support, that's your right and your privilege. It seems to me, for those of us who won't be able to go back, there's something that we could be doing while we can't do any business here. And I had learned that the headquarters of the, or at least a large, one of the large regional headquarters of the growers complex, I forget what it was. I would need to do that. I would suggest that the rest of us all go and picket this national headquarters office of this growers association or whatever it was.
Was it the Farm Bureau?
What could it have been?
It might have been the Farm Bureau.
Well, anyway, and then also we could all, I said, some of us could go there, or we could deploy ourselves to grocery stores all over the St. Louis area and support the strike, which they did. So I came home and was my name mud. You know, I hadn't supported really that trip out here to Coachella, but I suggest an alternate action for those of us who were there. And that was at a things were at a fever pitch in those days. You know, maybe you're getting the picture. I hope you can.
Yes. I hope
you are a little bit. Of trying to be faithful to these churches, of listening to them. I went and met in those years with over 30 groups of growers, most of the time by myself, because they wanted me to explain why our denomination, why our conference was involved at all. And it took a lot of listening. I remember going to one church in the Lodi area. I'll never forget that. I went to that meeting that night with a group of their leaders, a large group of them, all men, I might say. The leadership of the church in those days was all male in that group. And they wanted to know why I had sent some ministers down to the picket line at Delano, first strike, And I said, well, I can answer that easily. I didn't send anybody down there. I've never sent anybody down on the picket lines to go anywhere. And one fellow reached in his pocket, took out a newspaper article, and he said, you're telling a lie. Here is the picture, here's the newspaper, and there's the picture. And it says on the top, underneath the picture, that ministers of the United Church of Christ were in the picket line. And I looked at the picture and I recognized several of them. I said, well, number one, I didn't send them down there. Secondly, they had gone down there and back before I even knew that anybody had gone. And they said, you didn't send them down there. I said, no, I didn't send them down there. This gentleman sat down. After a while, he stood up again. He said, I want to understand what you're saying. He said, you said you didn't send them down on that picket line. I said, no, I did not send them. I didn't even know there was a picket line until after it was over. And then he said, well, then I have a question. If you didn't send them down there, why didn't you? He said, no, I don't mean that. He said, no, I didn't want them to be there. But they should never do anything that you are their boss, that you don't tell them to do. And it happened to be a congregation of people who had a strong authoritarian kind of bent in Ireland. They happened to come out of this evangelical and reformed church, which was a much more regulated church from tops down. Mm-hmm. You don't do what the bishop doesn't tell you to do or whatever. And I would say at least half of their concern in that night was not just the farm workers' issue, but the matter of the authority as to how come in our denomination people can do what they think is right without clearing with the head office.
So a lot of those ballot churches had originally been evangelical and reformed churches.
Not a great many.
Some were.
There was a way that the balance was. We had about 120 congregational churches, and they had only about 8. Walter Press served one of those churches in Sacramento, one of them in Lodi. There weren't very many, and the one that I reported to you here happened to be one of those that was caught up in that authoritative role.
Yes.
And that was another part of, along the line, I had it said to me several times by people who said, we should never have gotten involved in the United Church of Christ because we never had problems like these before we went together with the other denominations.
Without any sense of the larger social picture. I mean, all the chaos that was happening.
It was coincidental that the United Church of Christ was born about that time. Why couldn't it have been born 10 years earlier, 10 years later? But the structure to become a new body. At the same time, you were being hit by a lot of the other things that you had a lot of difference of opinions about.
Made it a
horrendous struggle.
Jeez.
And so whatever we are, we were born out of that struggle aspect.
Forged in the fires.
Yes, yeah, literally we were. On the phone, you asked me, what happened to these churches, did man quit or what? I take a lot of pride, not a lot of personal pride, a lot of feeling, a lot of good feeling, that we came through that horrendous period not having compromised what we started out to do. And in spite of all of the heartache and the headache and the backache and every other kind of ache, I think we probably lost altogether, not more than 3 or 4 churches. There were some who probably would not have stayed with us anyway. But when the thing became so intensely personal, the agony within those churches was such that they just couldn't handle it. some of these churches would have died for other reasons, and some did along the line. They just outlived a certain kind of usefulness, or life had moved beyond them, or they got into a little socioeconomic cul-de-sac in some way. But you know, but then when you get a massive blow, and without knowing fully what it was that was happening, we did lose two or three. But we managed to maintain the goodwill of the people by and large. At another one of these national meetings in Boston, I think that must have been about 1971, or they meet every 2 years.
Mm. On the odd year.
On the odd, on the odd years. In 1971, the farm worker who had been deployed to the Boston area got access to the leadership of our synod and got permission prior to one evening session to tell the whole assembly in a non-official session for about 15 minutes what the farm worker movement and the grape strike was all about. He happened to be a pretty effective speaker, as I recall, did a good job. However, heading our delegation that year, or in our delegation, was one of the leading growers from a church near Lodi, a man of real integrity, a fine person. He was the moderator of our conference at that time, and came to me afterwards and said, "Vic," he said, "that was just patently unfair. That's not on the program. They let the farm worker speak to that whole assembly." And he said, "There needs to be a rebuttal." And I said, "Well, Len," I said, "I can't think of anybody that could state the other opinion better than you." And I said, "You know how our conference already feels about it, but I think what you're saying is fair." And I said, "Let me talk to some of the folks and see if tomorrow night, for 15 minutes before the evening session, you're given a chance to say something. Would you do that?" Well, he's a very kind of a shy individual. He's not a speaker at all. He said, "Well, I don't know of anybody else, and so I will." He sweated all the next day to work out a statement. And we did get permission for him to give his statement. And it really wasn't done nearly as well as the work of the night before. But he did it. He had a chance. Not nearly as many people were there to hear his as there was for the farm worker. The sympathy was in the direction of the farm worker. But I'll tell you, Leonard Thompson was his name, came back home, and he told what had happened. He told the other growers. He said, "It should not have happened, but I was given a chance to talk to our whole national body, and I was introduced by our conference ministry, who told that body of where our stand was as a conference, but that as an individual he felt that I had the right to say what I wanted to say." You know, that little gesture spread more, you know, I don't say a lot of goodwill, but as the executive of the conference, trying to hold everybody together, to at least let Leonard have a chance to say it, even though the conference's whole sympathy was in the other direction, just meant an awful lot to them. And when I retired from the conference office, I didn't think there'd be anything to pay a little farewell and so forth. And a group of these growers showed up.
Wow.
And a lot of them, actually quite a group of them in Oakland, had brought me a case of a very, very high class wine. And said, "You know, you deserve this." Because, you know, you never wrote us off, or you listened to us, even when we were so mad at you. And we didn't know what we should do with you. But I thought that was kind of nice. Maybe they were just so glad that I was leaving. But I don't think it was that.
It was
a feeling that we had been in a mutual struggle, and we had been on different sides. And I had a dual role. I had a dual role to be what I thought was right, as well as a role of trying to keep an organization from collapsing, which it could so easily have done.
People do like to be respected.
Yeah, yeah.
Goes a long way.
Yeah.
But I think we always know when it's real and when it's not real.
And, you know, I had to go through that thing with several other issues. Bishop Pike and I led 40 ministers down on the walk from Selma to Montgomery after we had gone to Congress and lobbying in Congress for 3 or 4 days on the civil rights issue. And then when Bill Johnson's the homosexual ordination issue came up all over again. sometimes I've already... it's surprising that the people have been open as they have to let these new issues flow over them and to begin to penetrate and understand what was this issue. What do you do when you're a member of the church? I was sitting at lunch today with a lady, a large women's gathering here today, who said that she had left this church because of Bill Johnson's affair and had gone to another church where she thought it would be safer, ran into the same issue there, but in a different form. So I had to say, Alice, you know, there's just no hiding place. You just better stick with a group of people that you are in love with and you can agonize together, knowing you're going to disagree.
Yes.
But the truth has to be told.
The attempt to live compassionately is not an easy one, and I think that's the factor that that in the sense of justice, which is related, is the factor that overarches all of these issues where we feel like we're, you know, the bear in the shooting gallery. You know, hit me again.
I have so many others, but one other. I remember when Caesar was leading his walk from down in the valley to the capital,
Sacramento.
And I was due to be in a church, speak in a church, I think in Stockton, or was it Lodi? I don't recall. It was an Easter morning that it came to a climax. But I went up on Saturday and walked the last portion of the walk with them to I think it was a schoolhouse building.
Just outside of Sacramento.
Yes, just outside. Were you there?
Yeah, I was there.
I'll never forget it, you know, and that simple building. And somebody had gotten some flowers and put it in a milk bottle or something on a stand, and there was a worship experience in that building, devoid of all of the lilies and all the things, but all the fervor, as you remember, of that walk and what it meant, and I entered into that thing fully, and it felt so good. I'll never forget my feeling when I had to leave there, watched my clock so that I could get back down to this speaking engagement in one of these churches. And it was a terrible tug of emotions for me. You know, the church is beautifully decorated. The whole thing is banked with Easter lilies. And all the things, all the accoutrements that go with Easter. And I did the best I could, I suppose. But, you know, compared to that simple experience earlier in the day and up there, I really wanted to tell those people something different. I said, like saying, these lilies are lovely, and they're all in memorials for people that we remember, and we're not decrying that. There are some other issues that we're also celebrating on days like this. So I did my best to deal with it, but it was purely an internalized thing, the dichotomy of two kinds of celebrations on that Easter.
Yes.
Which
It was at, it was actually Easter morning that you were still up there.
Yeah,
in Sacramento. Yeah.
Yeah, the thing ended on Easter morning.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that the night before there was some kind of a big meeting, and I couldn't remember if the Mass that we celebrated was the night before or was that morning. I had forgotten myself.
Well, I guess it maybe was a Mass in the sense that, well, it certainly, it wasn't a traditional Mass.
No.
It was a religious experience.
Yes.
It wasn't a political rally.
Yes.
We were there expressing thanks to God on Easter morning. And
I wanted to ask you if you have any further recollections about Chris's role, and both with yourself and with other clergy that you were involved in, but also in the larger picture with, as he, I know he went out to speak at a lot of these churches.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, Chris was just invaluable, from my point of view, in that whole movement so far as the relationship to the churches was concerned. I don't think that we would have been able to understand all the ramifications of the farm workers' movement if it, it would have been another issue, it would have been another strike somewhere. But because of our because of the traditional tie for so many years of so many of our churches with the migrant ministry in the former, more, the other more traditional role, that was still there. Plus Chris's own charisma, his own style, his own integrity that commended him so much to us. I can only speak for myself. I grew up in a somewhat agricultural community in the Midwest, and so I'm a little sensitive to what agriculture means and all that. But I don't think that our churches would have been able to relate in the same penetrating way to that whole issue